Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Viral Vyas is the Associate Director for Regional Population Health at Novartis. He helps plan and implement population health solutions that enhance patient outcomes, increase patient access, and lower overall healthcare costs. Prior to joining Novartis, Dr. Vyas was a clinical pharmacist for the United Health Group. He has also served as a pharmacy manager for Target Pharmacy, now a part of CVS Health. Dr. Vyas received his Doctor of Pharmacy degree from Midwestern University and continues to help mentor and develop future pharmacy leaders at both Roosevelt University and his alma mater. Hello, Dr. Vyas. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hey, Iqbal, how are you? Please call me Viral. You've known me for so long. So please, Viral, we're just friends. You know, I appreciate it. But Viral, thank you for having me on here.
Yeah, no, I'm super excited to have you. I mean, it's been too long, my friend. It's been way too long. I remember having a conversation with you prior to or during the pandemic, and I was like, man, this could be the start of something big. And look at this.
Yeah.
You know, we're like in our 50s, 60s episode, and I finally get you back. So I'm super excited to have you and very, very excited to learn more about, you know, what your role is at Novartis and the great things that your company is doing. Viral, there's a lot of people that are listening to this episode and wondering who you are. Maybe not. Everyone under the sun has met you yet. I know that I always think of you as the king of networking. So there may be a couple of individuals that are like, oh, who is this guy? Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Perfect. No, thank you, Iqbal, and I appreciate the kind words. So my name is Dr. Viral Vyas. I'm a pharmacist by training. I currently work at Novartis as a population health account management MSL. And in that role, we kind of work together as that medical lead or that medical forefront to work with population health decision makers, as well as payers and those systems of care, those health systems, to kind of take all of these complexities of healthcare and all these different facets that we have and streamline them and make sure that we're able to achieve optimal patient access and advance that population health based on, you know, the company's guidelines and kind of their goals for that year. And so that's kind of my journey in this role. Prior to this, and like I said, I'm a pharmacist by training. Prior to this, I graduated from Midwestern, which is where I know you went as well. Super excited about that. And then, from there, I started my career in a community pharmacy where I had a really unique opportunity. And if you want, we can definitely dig into that. And then from there, I went to Optum, where I worked in the PBM payer space. And I don't have a residency or a fellowship, but I've just been very fortunate to have a lot of unique experiences and opportunities.
I think that that's one of the remarkable things about you and a few other individuals that I've known is that, you know, you've charted your own path, and that's very important, right? You've been like, well, you know, here's what this traditional pathway looks like, but you've been able to find and create opportunities, which I think is going to be very valuable for the listeners. I'm sure that most of the listeners are familiar with Novartis, you know, whether you're a nurse or a pharmacist or a doctor, like everyone at some point has had a touch with a drug or a product that Novartis makes. But just to give some context to the listeners, I'm going to share a little bit about the company, right? So most of the world knows that Novartis is one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world that was ranked 218 on the Fortune 500. It is a Swiss-based organization, but it has, you know, headquarters both in the United States, Switzerland, a lot of other countries as well, with 108,000 employees. What I think was very interesting is that there's like actually like five business lines within the organization, right? There's like Innovative Meds, there's Sandoz, the generic side of the organization, there's the Advanced Accelerator application process, which really focuses on, if I'm not mistaken, radioligand therapy and precision imaging. And then you also have a clinical stage gene therapy through Gyroscope Therapeutics. That's like cutting edge. Very remarkable, very advanced, human-based healthcare programs and trying to save the world in many different facets. And again, it's a huge company, right? But over the course of time, it has maintained its stature in quality. Even in the last year or two, like it has won numerous awards. So it was ranked number 5 on the pharma list on Fortune World's Most Admired Companies. It was listed to Bloomberg's Gender Equality Index. It was ranked number 3 on the Association of Talent Development's Best Award list. It was listed as one of the world's 25 best workplaces, and it was also included on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. I mean, these are not small accolades. These are huge things. And when you think about how a company can be able, you know, achieve those types of milestones, it's not just the mission and the vision, it's the people that believe in that, including yourself, which is, makes me extremely happy to have you on the show today and to talk about a lot of the things that you do. Vero, as an MSL, which is like the short version of the being, you know, Associate Director of Regional Population Health, you know, I know that your territory has shifted over the last couple of months. If I'm not mistaken, at one point, I think it was just like Central Midwest, right? Wisconsin and Illinois. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you do on a day-to-day basis and where you go. I think that that would be fascinating for those that are looking at what is an MSL. I've heard of this before, but I don't know anybody that's an MSL. And, you know, what would I need to do to get there? So when I get there, I can be like, oh, this is what Viral does. Yeah, I think I could do that. Or I need to learn.
No, I appreciate that. And I think one thing to note as well is our team actually won an award as one of the, you know, best managed outcomes MSLs in the industry. I think this is a recent award. I'm very fortunate to work with some really great individuals. So my role as an MSL, I work, so it's a little bit of account management, a little bit of MSLing. So there's therapeutic area MSLs that will focus on one specific disease state, one specific disease area. They're kind of that expert. There's managed markets MSLs that kind of will focus with the payer space and things of that sort. And then our role kind of is a little bit interesting where we get to work with population health decision makers. So I cover the whole general medicine portfolio. So that would be cardiology, rheumatology, dermatology, immunology, ophthalmology. There's a few more that I might be missing, but you know, there's a decent amount of disease states that we cover. And for us, we'll focus with those C and D suite executives or those population health decision makers, even if they may not be a C or D suite executive, if they have that influence or that ability to drive the strategy for that population, that may be some of the areas that we'd focus on in a system of care or a health system. Traditionally, you know, hospital, integrated delivery network, something of that sort. And then with the payers, we'll work with them to drive you know, show the economic value of our products, the clinical value of our products, you know, in hopes to get that unrestricted formulary access the best position that we can in the formulary there. And so in terms of a day-to-day, the beautiful thing about my job is there's no standard day-to-day, which for me, and I think you know me, which for me works really well. I really enjoy autonomy. I enjoy being able to do lunch when I want to do lunch. That's kind of the joke I give everybody, but every day is a little bit different. So, you know, in the past couple of weeks, there have been days where I cover the whole state of Wisconsin. And then I also had the opportunity to kind of extend myself or have a stretch assignment where I'm covering Nashville and East Tennessee for one of the health systems, as well as some of those alternative injection sites. And so my day-to-day is a little bit unique in terms of there might be one day I'll focus on cardiology, one day where there may be a need in rheumatology, one day where the work that I'm doing in rheumatology will impact cardiology. And so the way that I operate in my role is I think of it in a very strategic mindset and an enterprise mindset, saying, hey, how can this hour that I'm, you know, investing today, how can that impact the whole organization? So I don't know if that helps, that doesn't help. I can give you a high level. You know, there's parts of my role where I'm doing education, parts of my role where we're working with quality directors to drive quality metrics in terms of how can we help support them, working on those to work with populations of patients where we can say, hey, how can we help you identify these patients? And obviously it's blinded and stuff. How can we help you risk stratify, things of that sort? And in my role, it's also unique because I don't have any direct reports, but there's a lot of cross-functional partners that I have to, you know, get their buy-in and work with. In the system side, there's probably at least like four or five that I talk to on a daily basis that we kind of have to work together and jive. In addition to that, I have all my therapeutic area MSLs that I work with on a probably weekly basis. Most of them I touch base with and see what's going on in their disease areas. How can we help assist? And then there's also the payer side where I have an account manager on the payer side. So it's a lot of cross-functional stuff, but it's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like really, I don't want to say sporadic, but it sounds so like interconnected, and the ability to be able to stay not just focused on what you're doing here today, but then also be aware of all of the moving parts, really requires a project manager's mindset. Like you have to be able to know, hey, there's like 100 things happening at once. But for me right now in this space, here's what my focus is. And then know who the right people are within that space to figure out where the progress has been made, what support is required, and then what tools or resources or information is necessary to be able to help influence decision makers. Viral, is there a recent success story that maybe you can share with us, like in the large area that you cover? Because Wisconsin's not a tiny state, and neither is Tennessee or anything else. But like, you know, in your travels, in your conversations, was there an initiative that you took on because you recognized that there was a need and what efforts have been made towards that? Or maybe in one of the interactions you've had, you were successful in helping them see, you know, your point of view and help convince them that, you know, your product, your service was more valuable for patients and the health system in and of itself?
Yeah, sure. And I appreciate that question. I think the other unique part about my role, and I forgot to mention, is we can be, you know, we can be product specific if that's what the customer needs, or we have the opportunity to be, you know, above brand or brand agnostic. We can talk disease state, kind of go through that route as well. And so one of the recent success stories that we've had is in a lot of these initiatives and health systems and things take a lot of time. And so that's the part about our role where we can kind of connect that and bring all those key players together and streamline that. Something that's been really exciting recently that's kind of in the works is there's one of the disease areas that we're working on where it's kind of a focus of our company, and it's also a focus of this health system that we're working with. And there's been a lot of key players that we've kind of had to bring apart, and this is maybe going on for about 6 months now. And so one of the recent successes is a little step forward in terms of us being able to bring those key players together. There's three subsets in this specific disease state that we are working on and really focusing to drive that forward. And so now we're kind of in the next steps of, hey, where can we put together these specific criteria, or how can we help you identify these specific subset of patients, and kind of moving forward in terms of that.
I think that sometimes health system C-suite and D-suite level executives have a bandwidth in terms of, number one, what they're being exposed to and whatever mindset they're bringing in, right? But they also have a bandwidth of time. When they have these interactions with you, right, like you have this much to be able to help them see, like, okay, tell me what your problem is. And then here's what our solutions are or recommendations are. And then partnership, right? Like it's both behind the scenes. And sometimes, as you pointed out, like, you know, you'll give presentations to some of their groups and to help educate them. But, you know, I think that what's always helpful is like, was there ever a challenging point where you were like, look, this guy or this girl is just not understanding what we're trying to say, and that you had to like push harder. I think that that would be really great, because I think sometimes, from my vantage point, like, you know, I've done different types of education and training before, but it's always like, here's my information, pick it up, leave it, don't, you know, there's nothing I can do, right? But your role is very different. And I think that would be great to hear a challenge that maybe you had where you were like, no, I'm not letting this go. We're going to keep working at this.
So I think for me, my whole beginning of my job was kind of like that. So in the state of Wisconsin, I didn't go to school in Wisconsin, didn't go to pharmacy school, didn't really, you know, live there or whatever. And so for me, kind of building those contacts and those relationships and building that trust, right? People do business, or people work with people they know, like, and trust. And so to do that was really challenging. And so getting into my role originally, you maybe get a list, or there's some warm handoffs that they give you, and they kind of give you, hey, you can email these people and see if it works out or whatnot. And so we have initiatives where we have to work on, you know, say we have a new drug that we launch. Well, there's a specific disease state, and we're going to work on this disease state to drive better optimal care for patients in the specific disease state. And that's fine and all, but I got to make sure that the health systems and the payers have that as a priority as well. And so it's kind of twofold. One is being able to get access to even talk to people and people to even talk back to me and just engage and say, hey, I don't want to sell you nothing. I'm on the medical side in my role. I don't get incentivized by sales. I don't know what happens with sales. I don't really, that's not in my purview. And so to kind of emphasize that and relay that has been a, you know, a little challenge in the beginning. But what I found was really successful was I would go where the people are. So I learned that if you go, it'll grow. And if you don't, it won't. And so I invested a lot of nights in Wisconsin. I was probably in Wisconsin when I first started, four, maybe five, sometimes three nights a week, sometimes five nights a week, somewhere in that range, just meeting different stakeholders, meeting different people. And that was probably the biggest challenge for me, is just even getting access to the individual that I needed to talk to. But I had to go through like seven people to get to that end user, the end person. And that's been the biggest challenge, I would say, because then after that, you know, the next challenge I would say is that, hey, being able to align on what our priorities are as well as their priorities are. And I think what happened is in one of those health systems where we're moving forward, what happened is our specific subset of this disease state wasn't a priority in the beginning. But again, I'm brand agnostic, I'm product agnostic. And so kind of building that relationship, meeting them where their needs were, we helped them on a similar, but not the specific disease state that we needed, but a similar disease state, kind of helped them and did a little small test of change. And then what happened is they, hey, realized that, hey, we weren't trying to sell them a bag of goods, or, you know, we were really there to genuinely partner with them and see how we could help their patients. It was product agnostic. And so really able to drive that. And maybe three and a half months of doing that, we started to build that trust and that relationship and that rapport. And then as that started to happen, this was maybe 2 weeks ago, we had met to say, hey, you know, what are kind of your priorities halfway through the year? Where does that look like? And so they brought up that, hey, one of the disease states that we originally needed to talk about was a priority of theirs, in addition to what we had been working on. And so I think what was really beneficial, and kind of summarizing that, what was really beneficial was meeting the customer where their needs are, meeting people at their needs, right? Like, I'm not trying to sell you a bag of goods. I'm really just here to be, I'm here to serve you, right? It's like servant leadership. I'm here to serve you and help you how we can. And really building that trust and rapport, because as I built that trust and rapport, you know, individual X would say, hey, Viral, do you know individual Y? Or, hey, do you know this person? Let me do an email introduction for you. Let me send them a message. And that's been super powerful. But for the first maybe 6 months or so of my role, it was not like that.
Viral, being in the role that you're in, right, as an MSL, like, you have an opportunity to network with other MSLs, and you probably, you know, have conversations about what the future of, you know, population health looks like, and how systems of care are changing. Like, what do you and your colleagues see is coming down the pike in the next few years? Like, how does your world look different, or will it be the same in 2025?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I feel like population health is a you know, kind of that forefront of medicine. I always thought of, you know, hey, the pharmaceutical industry is being that forefront of innovation, that forefront of medicine. And now you add population health. I really feel like there may be a little more of an importance, or maybe not a little more of importance isn't the right word, but there will be more of a focus on these systems of care and these integrated delivery networks, because there's so many of our patients that are getting care from these areas. You know, a lot of these health systems are where people go for their primary care, or even, you know, all these other specialties. And so I feel like there will really be a focus on there. And that's really exciting as a healthcare provider, right? First and foremost, we're all the healthcare providers or whatnot there. And so that's really exciting, because one of the things that I noticed when I was starting off my pharmacy career was there were so many of these gaps, and so many of these, you know, patient would get discharged and then you don't know what happens, or patient would come in, you don't know what happens, and they're meds are completely different and nobody did med rec or whatever. And that is getting better, and that is good and all. But I think that the way with population health, we'll be able to work at that higher level to then impact that whole organization of patients and say, hey, this is something that we can work to. Hey, so maybe this is where our benchmark needs to be for this specific measure. Hey, this is where this needs to be for this specific measure. And it's good to do it with an individual provider. And that's great. And, you know, our customers are a little bit different than maybe a therapeutic area MSL. They may work with an individual provider and work with them to maybe do some more research or give that information. And we kind of work with the people that will influence that strategy and influence those decisions. And so in the population health arena, that's something that's becoming more commonplace. So now people say, oh, population health, it's not weird. You're not trying to sell me a bag of goods. It kind of helps you bring it a little bit easier and say, hey, we're really just trying to help a big subset of your patients in a larger and more impactful way than we might have been able to maybe 5 years ago. And I think that that will still continue as we progress forward. I think the other thing that is exciting is technology, right? And so with technology, as it improves and as we're able to take these data pieces and make this data actionable, right? You have data, and if you just have data, it just sits there. But if you can take that data and make it actionable and impact patients' lives or impact the health system for the better, that's really where I think there's a lot of power as well. And I think a lot of these places will start doing that as well. And so excited about that piece as well. I think there's a lot of innovation in data coming up that we haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg yet.
Yeah. And I mean, even from my vantage point, right, from talent acquisitions, like data has just become a paramount. It is almost like the foundation of everything that is happening today. So just imagine where we'll be like in a few years when most of the data systems, you know, are just intertwined and working in a streamlined capacity. I love that. Viral, we spent quite a bit of time talking about your role and what you do at Novartis. I'd like to learn a little bit more about you and, you know, some of your thought processes and some of the journey that you've had to get to where you are today. You mentioned several roles that you've already held. Prior to working as an associate director of regional population health at Novartis, you were a clinical pharmacist at United Health Group. And then even before that, you were an executive team lead or a pharmacy manager at Target Pharmacy. Each one of these professional steps that you've taken, I'm sure you've had a point of reflection where you've had to reassess or just assess, you know, hey, is this the right decision for me? What I've built this, wherever you were at in your journey, like I've already built this up, I'm familiar with this, and now I'm going to leave what I know to embrace something that is unknown. And is the benefit there? Is there risk? You know, how do you attach, let me rephrase that. How do you approach decision-making functions in that space for your own career? Like, what are some of the big boulders that you use as factors to determine this is going to be good for me, my family, my career? And has there ever been a point where you've said no because it didn't mesh or align with what your priorities were?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think that's a question that is good wherever you are in your phase of your career. And you've been really helpful in this as well. I know there's been multiple conversations where I've picked up the phone. You've been fortunate enough to kind of say, hey, Viral, this makes sense, or this doesn't make sense, or hey, kind of watch out for this. But I think the biggest thing is something that I learned early on was, how do I want to live, right? I think sometimes we ask the wrong question to students or people that are graduating or as they're going to their next degree or their next role. Instead of what do you want to do, I think we should ask people, how do you want to live? And that's kind of been the focus of what I've asked. And each time I've reflected, where maybe I feel like I'm getting stagnant, or maybe I feel like I want to change, or I'm not vibing with this, or this doesn't feel good, I've always looked at and said, hey, how do I want to live? And I would write down maybe anywhere from 4 to 10 criteria of things that I wanted to, how did I want to live? Didn't have to be job specific, but hey, did I want to have flexibility? Did I want to go into an office? Did I want to have autonomy? Did I want to be micromanaged or not? What did that look like? And as I would write each of those down, I would put it out into the universe and I would say, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And it's going to work out. You know, I didn't even know about my current role. I would say maybe it's an accident, or maybe it's the universe kind of putting it in my path. But I didn't even know about my current role that it existed, because when I first started looking for this role, I wanted to be, a therapeutic area MSL, because that's all I knew. And then as I started doing interviews, so essentially for me to get to this role, I reached out to about 2,500 people on LinkedIn, cold contacted. Yeah. And from that, I was fortunate to talk to about 155, similar to, you know, Zoom conversation or something like that. So it's like a 6% ratio. But what I realized was it's like a deck of cards. You have 52 cards. The quicker you flip them and the better you flip them, right? You're going to get to the four aces. If you flip them bad, you might miss ace. But as you do quality flips, you'll get to that aces quicker. And that was kind of really important for me in figuring out, hey, where did I want to go next? And as I started having these informational interviews, people started saying, hey, you have a payer background, you have a managed care background, maybe these kind of roles might be good for you as well. So I focused my net, right? I broadened it a little bit more to include a couple more roles. And as I started doing that, I firmly believe it's because I wrote down, there was five things I wrote down that I wanted. And I still have it on my desk. It's like a little post-it note that I left in my wallet, and I would just look at it all the time, all the time. And I think that really helps guide where you would like to go next.
I like that. And I like that approach. So when you saw that this as an opportunity, you know, was there any hesitation on your behalf? Was there anything when you looked at this role and you were sort of like, it matches with the way that I want to live, but there's something there I'm not sure of yet?
In terms of my specific role, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So I think for me, it was, you always kind of get that imposter syndrome, if you will. You're like, oh, am I good enough? Oh, am I able to do this? I don't have the specific experience that they want on paper or whatever. I may not have all of it. There might be people that are better than me. And so in that case, that's where I kind of had maybe a little bit of a hesitation as to, hey, you know. And the other thing was, I really like living where I'm living. And so I kind of wanted to be able to figure that piece out. And so I was able to figure that piece out. And then the other piece was, I just didn't know if I would qualify with all the other people that were on our team. On my specific team, there's some really sharp people. There's people that have, you know, years of experience leading systems of care, you know, years of experience in the payer space. And so for me, selfishly, it's good because I feel like if I'm never that smartest person in the room, or you know, that person that knows the most, and I always grow and I always learn. And I feel like every day I'm always learning and there's something new that I don't know. But those were some hesitations that I preliminarily had. But then I kind of went back to, I have a little self-talk, you know, and I kind of went back to the self-talk and I said, hey, you know, you can do this, you got this. And kind of, I was coaching somebody the other day and I was talking to this guy who's a physician, and I was talking to him and I was saying, hey man, if you don't believe in yourself, people will believe in you, but nobody's going to believe in you as much as you're going to believe in you. You got to be your best advocate first, and people will rally around you to bring that vision that you have to life.
Yeah, I think that's really great that you called out that. I think a lot of people have imposter syndrome or experience it at some point in their career. And for some people that are listening, maybe they're also struggling with that piece. And I think, you know, what's necessary is to recognize you are capable, right? You may not be 100% today, but you're 80% because you've had other experiences that have helped you gain those skills. And then the rest of it will just be learned, you know, while you're there.
Exactly. And I was talking to somebody who is, you know, a couple levels above me in one of the organizations, and just a really, really well sought out leader. And this individual was telling me, he's like, hey, when I look for other roles, if I'm going to go and apply and they say, hey, you don't have 100% of the experiences, he nicely told me the kind of attitude that, you know, you kind of think about is, hey, if I don't have 100% of the experiences, that's great, because that means I'm going to come to the role with the 80 that I have, and I'm going to strive to learn the 20. If I have 100, I'm not going to be engaged and I'm not going to learn anything, right? And so I never thought of that. But again, that's that piece of networking. As I keep learning and talking to more people, I get different perspectives and it helps me.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Vero, when I think about you, like, one of the first things that hits me is that you are like a king of networking. Like, you have just mastered the art of being able to meet new people, establish a relationship with them, and then to help continuously facilitate both conversation and add value. And I think it's important, you know, we have guests that on the show all the time that talk about like how important it is to network, but we never really discuss the hows behind it. We know the why. We know why it's important from a professional standpoint. I'd love to understand a little bit about what you look for in individuals when you're networking, or, you know, if you've decided that, you mentioned like you reached out to like, you know, 2,500 people on LinkedIn, like brand, like cold call, like no idea who you are. So, you know, from a virtual perspective and maybe also an in-person perspective, like how do you situate yourself to start that? And then what are you looking for in an individual to determine, hey, this is somebody that I'm going to continue networking with to be able to gain value and build trust for both of us?
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And thank you for the kind words. I don't think I'm a king of networking by any means, but I appreciate it. It's a lot of intentional work. So I think we talked about being extroverted a little bit earlier, and I'm actually very introverted. And I think we've talked about this. I'm very introverted. And I think this was really impactful. Actually, we were at a conference, APHA, I think, and I think you were there for some reason. You facilitated something in one of your old roles when you were, in one of your old prior roles in the community setting, and there was an introduction that you facilitated, and so that kind of got me thinking. And so what I look for is, it depends if I'm networking, you know, for a specific reason, but I genuinely feel like networking shouldn't just be for, hey, you know, transactional. Hey, Iqbal, I need this X, Y, and Z, and I'm going to give you this. I think that, you know, your network is your net worth, right? Like, that's been a saying that's been said around. And I think that it's really important to take relationships from stranger to acquaintance to friend to family. And that's kind of where I try to take that threshold. And I think you actually had Flora on this podcast, and that's exactly what happened to Flora. I didn't know Flora at all, who she was or anything. We were an acquaintance, random stranger on a panel together, and I didn't even get to be in the same room. So again, it was a straight up cold contact on LinkedIn. And from there, I transitioned to, you know, friends like family, where I've met her parents, I've met her kids, I've been at her home, super gracious. And so that's just an example of that. But in doing that, I think I look for people that I would want to do life with. It's very simple. People that I would want to hang out with, associate with. And, you know, part of that is, hey, if I'm looking for a specific role or specific skill set or specific industry, that's one piece. And I will try to learn that from them and graciously ask if they have some time to invest in our relationship. Another piece is, if I just am curious about their journey or just intrigued by them, that's another piece. And then a third piece is just trying to make more friends and trying to, I'm not saying you have to have a bunch of friends and be superficial, but just trying to make more friends and develop that connection. And I think that third piece was something that's really relevant to me in outside of work. So I think someone talked to me about this too recently. I've had a lot of interesting conversations. Someone talked to me last week about this, where it's not work-life balance, but it's work-life integration. And so I think about now I kind of, again, networking gives you that perspective, right? So I think of that perspective as, hey, how can I integrate what I do in the workspace or my career space with my life space? And in doing that, I moved to the city of Chicago and always want to meet new people. And it's, you know, sometimes when winter comes, you can't go run around the city all day long or all night long, you know, so you kind of got to make friends in terms of that. And so I was talking to somebody, and it's just easier to start conversations if you kind of have a skeleton. For me, my mind works like in a methodical skeleton process. And so something I was taught, and, you know, my parents, you know, my parents have had businesses. And so in one of the earlier businesses, one of the teachings or the trainings that they were doing is, hey, when you meet people, have kind of a skeleton, right? Find a genuine compliment, right? And I think that's impactful because it puts out good vibes. It makes you think about a possibility or the solution or the good things in people, as opposed to, oh, you know, the weather sucks today, or, you know, hey, this is what's going on, you know? And so in that, there was kind of an acronym that I was taught. It was FORM: family, occupation, recreation, and message. And in that, it doesn't work for everything, but it's a skeleton, right? It's like when you go to the grocery store, right? You're not going to get everything at the supermarket. You get what you want, you put it in your cart, you pay and you leave, right? But if you didn't get something, it's not like, oh, it's the end of the world. No, you kind of get, you adjust to what your needs are at life at that time. And so that's been something that's helpful. And that's kind of how I go about it, whether it is in a career setting or in a personal setting. But I'm very naturally introverted. So it takes me work and it expends energy for me to do that. But the reason that I do it is because if I don't, then I will lose that sharpness in that skill set, and then I will retract and be more scared. Very honestly, like, you know, I'm very honest and very candid. And so that's been the piece where I will keep doing it because I need to do it. But there are events that I go to, like there are social events that I go to that I'm not trying to enjoy my food. Like, you know, there's a bunch of weddings that I've been going to. I'm trying to enjoy my food, do my thing, and then, you know, but I don't know if that helps, or we went on a tangent.
No, I think it's great, right? I mean, for a lot of us, including myself, like, I don't know if I would say I'm an introvert, but I would say I'm an ambivert. I know that there are times when I'm like, okay, I am so spent and just trying to be out there. I just need some time to be able to take in the stimulus that's happening and process it. And I just need a little bit of like breathing room in order to be able to start moving forward. But what I really loved is your skeleton. Like, I think anytime that anyone can create a formula that can be replicable for their own success, it's really remarkable, right? It doesn't have to be, it will never even be like, you know, duplicable in every situation, right? But at least you can say, hey, Why don't we start talking upon something that's tangential to both of us and that's a starting ground? And then from there, we can move up and up. And then from there, you know, you can be like, oh, yeah, we have that similarity or we both had that experience. And that helps build that bridge, which I think is, you know, hard for people. You know, when I would go and do these presentations about networking in my former life, you know, one of the things that I would always encourage people to do is never do networking alone. And the reason was that because, you know, it's hard for you to sell yourself in whatever capacity that might be.
Sure.
Even if you are talking from a personal perspective, sometimes they're like, well, you know, I just do this. It's not very important. But rather than do that, if you take a colleague with you, that person can be your champion. That person can say, hey, you really need to meet my friend Viral. Like, Viral is the king of networking, and he is smarter than I am. He's smarter than 40 of us combined. Let me introduce you to him, right? And I think it's great because now, like, you that portion of awkwardness has been removed for that person, and now then they just get to be who they are in that conversation that will organically form. So, but the skeleton that you just introduced, I'm going to actually probably adopt that. I'm going to start working on, you know, incorporating those in future in-person meetings that are right around the corner for me. And I'm excited to do that.
Yeah. And I think to your point, so I did the National Patient Counseling Competition while I was in pharmacy school. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say I'm the smartest crayon in the crayon box or whatever, but if I can put it into a formula, it kind of makes sense in my mind. And so the second year, I won second runner up in the nation. But the reason that I did was I was taught a formula. There was three questions you had to ask and you intertwine things in that. Mm-hmm. I took that formula when I taught at Midwestern and I took that formula and I gave it to students to say, hey, you got this coming up, use this formula, it will help you. So I think there are bits and pieces to your point where it's replicable. And even as I shift into my career into, you know, maybe more of an executive role or maybe something down that line, I still think whatever phase of life or whatever phase of career you're in, it's still important to network, right? And to your point, there's been something that's been really valuable. There's been a couple of managed care organization meetings that I've been at. And I have a colleague who's similar to me in maybe mindset. He used to cover Wisconsin. And so I kind of look up to him in terms of that. And we'll piggyback and thrive off of each other. And actually, some of the account managers have noted that, hey, when you guys go into a conference together, you'll thrive off of each other and you'll bring something that the other person has. And so that's a really great call out if that's an opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate the validation on that, Viral, because I think that, you know, there is strength in numbers and you should be leveraged well. It always should be leveraged well. Viral, you mentioned Flora earlier, which I think is great. I know that she's a fantastic human being and she was a wonderful guest. I don't even remember what episode she was, maybe 16 or 14.
Sure,
if you're listening to this and you want to learn more about Flora, visit the page or just go to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You'll find her. Yeah. She's like in the teens in terms of episode. But I know that she was very helpful in you sort of navigating the next steps in your professional journey.
Sure.
And that's one of the hallmarks about this podcast is that I always ask my guests to talk about people that have been instrumental in their journey and helping them succeed. Are there others that you would like to acknowledge on the show today that have been instrumental in kind of opening your horizons or expanding your horizons, opening doors, or just developing you in ways that have helped you achieve the success that you are, that you've been able to achieve thus far?
Yeah, no, I think there's that saying that it takes a village, right? And I think I'm maybe not be like the brightest student or maybe the most polished, but I worked at it, right? And I think it definitely took a village. And I think to your point, you've definitely been one of those people that has been super instrumental from my Midwestern days, right? Kind of from when I was a student to, you know, graduating to a practitioner. There's been a lot of my teachers, you know, and I think if you would want me to name, I'd be here for so long, but, you know, one of those teachers that I think really changed the trajectory of my career would be, you know, Dr. Cornell, where, I was at an APHA meeting and she was like, hey, you know, you should come to this. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to go. And that really changed my trajectory into what I thought was possible and where I went. You know, Dr. Winkler, Dr. Maison gave me opportunities to teach, Dr. Hogan at Roosevelt, you know, so I had so many of these opportunities that people gave me. And I would also think that all of my bosses, right, all of my former bosses and current bosses, they all took a chance on me because I never, ever in my career have had, and I don't think I ever will, based on my personality, have 100% of the job roles or requirements. And I'm always going to keep stretching for that. And so I think all of my bosses that have taken a chance on me and said, hey, you know, I've been able to do this. And then, you know, obviously my parents, and I think my dad and I kind of relate in terms of, you know, my parents have that family business and they've had businesses. And so I kind of think a little bit strategic in that sense. And in those, you know, there's been a lot of people that have been able to mentor me as I was younger and kind of in that, but just so many people that I couldn't even name, but I would just like to acknowledge everybody that's ever helped me and continue to help me. I really, really do appreciate it. And hopefully I'm able to pay it back forward, you know?
I'm sure you will. And you may have already done so in a lot of ways, but there's always an opportunity to shape the future and pour into that as well. I have not had the opportunity to meet your parents, but I've seen the way that you have them on social media and your interactions with them. I am still looking forward to that. So let me know when that's possible. And I'd love to meet them. Let me talk a little bit about that, because your father, I believe, owns an insurance company. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that we don't really talk about on the show, but I think it'll be helpful because, you know, when we think about as a professional, and again, regardless of the stripe of healthcare that you're in, right? Nurse, pharmacy, optometry, respiratory therapist, veterinarian, you know, we understand that as a professional, that there's a need for a liability insurance, because if a decision is made, you know, you want that coverage, right? But there are other risk factors as a human being that people need to be aware of. Even as a new grad or a graduate after 5-7 years, there is student loan debt that still continuously needs to be paid off. So I'm kind of curious to know, like, you know, how are you able to be successful in minimizing your risk after graduation? And what advice do you have for others that may be still dealing with a lot of different life factors and wondering like where it is that they should be focusing on in order to sustain their lifestyle, but also to minimize risk in professional and personal affairs?
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that. And I think that's been something that's been selfishly really helpful for me, because there's been a lot of colleagues that I've been able to kind of connect my dad with these colleagues and, you know, peers of mine, that he's able to kind of walk them through that process, whether it's through, you know, whatever kind of insurance that they need. And the piece for me was I again reflected and I observed as I was going through school, I noticed that there were a lot of pharmacists that maybe didn't have a chance to take a risk, or maybe they were kind of felt stuck in that specific role. And the feedback that I had gotten, maybe this was about 5 or 10, so sample size kind of small, but you know, it was enough for me to pick up on it. And so what I realized was a lot of these people were like, hey, Viral, I can't take a risk, or I can't take maybe that $10,000 pay cut to switch to a different career path, even if I don't have that experience, and gain that experience to kind of maybe take my career in a different way, because I'm kind of paycheck to paycheck, if you will. They might have said it a nicer way. In my head, that's how it related to me, that I didn't want to be paycheck to paycheck. And so it was one of the other things that my dad kind of always told me. He's like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? Like that Spider-Man quote. And that's when I got my first credit card. And so he kind of said, hey, you always want to increase your means, but always live below your means. So live below your means, but always keep increasing your means. What does that mean? You keep increasing your lifestyle, but live below what you really could live below. And I think some of the things when I had rotation students, I would actually talk to them about, like, hey, we didn't learn this in school. Like, nobody taught us it. We spent 9 quarters or whatever with med chem and therapeutics, and that's good and all. And I see him laughing, that's good and all. But maybe some of that piece would have been important to say, like, hey, you're going to have these loans. If you took out loans, you're going to have interest, you're going to have to pay it. And so what I did was, I realized that people that were kind of stuck were stuck because of not just that, but that was some of the big components of the people that I interviewed. And so I realized if I could eliminate that, I could have a lot more flexibility and I could have a lot more of that autonomy and kind of work better with my lifestyle and my personality. So what I was kind of trying to do is I tried to minimize all that debt. I tried to pack away as much as student loans as I could and minimize that debt. You know, one of the things too that is, I really wanted an Audi S7. I don't know why I wanted an Audi S7. I just wanted it and I liked the way it looked. And I had this conversation with my dad and I was like, hey, I'm thinking about getting this car. And he's like, that's great. The car, the RS7, is probably as much as my loans were. My dad's like, that's great. You can either pay your loans off or you can get this car, which will depreciate in value, which is fine. And you've earned it, right? Like you can go do it. You pick what you want. And so I think I got like a Toyota Corolla instead or something, or like Chevy Malibu or something. Not bad car, but like, you know, and I chunked the rest of it to my loans. And I remember this very vividly. March 17th, I think it was 2017, was the day that I was able to kind of not have to worry about that. And so from there, I started practicing pharmacy differently, if I'm very honest with you. And I think we talked about this on the last time I was on your podcast. And I feel like so many people are kind of reactive or a little bit more cautious, whereas I would like to be on the offensive. I want to customize my career. I want to control my career rather than my career controlling me. Mm-hmm. And so from that day forward, I practiced medicine the way that I thought medicine should be practiced, not the way that I had to push based on some specific metric that I was given. And it's funny because as I was getting ready for this podcast, I was reflecting on it and I was talking to a coworker and I was like, you know, on Iqbal's podcast last time I was on, we talked about, you know, kind of pushing that envelope and obviously everything in compliant and legal fashion, but pushing that envelope and kind of taking control of your career and customizing it rather than being afraid of what might happen. And when I first started in this role, I think I was kind of in that place. And I think we had talked where I was like, oh, you know, can I do this? Can I not? Now it's like, you know, I kind of want to get back in that path of, hey, let's push the envelope and see what's available. So if you kind of limit those things that are maybe things that may hold you back, and I think this is in all phases of life, right? I saw something the other day on LinkedIn that, you know, there's, I think it's people that are making $250,000, a decent amount of millennials that are making $250,000 a year are still living paycheck to paycheck. So it doesn't matter what you make. Yeah. And I can send you that article. I think it's Bloomberg or one of those, you know, outlets. They did a study and it doesn't matter what you make. It's how you're spending what you're making or investing or whatever that case is. So you can make $100 or you can make $100,000. But if you're, if X plus one is going out, you're always going to be in trouble. And that's kind of what I was taught later, you know, early on in my life. Whether I'm going to be the VP of a company or president of a company, or if I'm in my current role, or it doesn't matter, I'm still going to live by that principle so that whatever happens, I should hopefully be okay. You know,
I resonate with what you've said 100%. Like at one point I was like, listen, I really want, I think it was an Acura TLX or a Lexus IS 300. Yep. And I'm like, you know, that's my car. Like that's the thing. And this was like recent, like maybe like in the last 7 years. And then I was like, I mean, honestly, I'm going to enjoy it for like maybe 2 months. But you know, post pandemic world, where am I going? Like literally it will sit in my garage and I will just have the ability to walk in and go look at that baby. Just look at her. Yep. She's like so great.
And then I'll just go back. If that's what you want to do, that's great.
Just absolutely. Sure but everything has both. Everything has like risks. Everything has like benefits and consequences, right? So as long as you
just
understand.
Make sure that car payment doesn't detract from your lifestyle. That's kind of how I think about it, right?
No, I think it's great. I think it's phenomenal. You know, Viral, you've done already so much in your career, but you know, as every successful individual and every successful leader that I've ever had on the show, there's always more that can be done and should be done. So I'd love to know, like, you know, what is next on your to-do list? Like even within the role that you're in today, what have you set for yourself as a goal in the next 12 or 18 months where you're like, I don't know what this is going to look like at the end, but I would really want to make sure that in the next 12 or 18 months, I'm doing this, starting this, or engaged with this to move that forward.
Yeah, sure. And I appreciate, again, the kind words. I think my role is really unique in the fact that I have the opportunity to work with so many people in the market access space, in the medical space, and in these different cross-functional areas. And I think something in my role that I would really like to do is make sure I'm, you know, developing in my role, gaining that broader understanding of the company, because as you mentioned, the company's so big, you know, gaining that broader understanding of the company and of the opportunities that we can to make that broader impact and hopefully progress towards that next director level role by making that broader impact, whether it's working with national accounts or working with some other strategic people and strategy or just different opportunities to make sure that I'm developing in the role and giving the most value, if that makes sense. And then, you know, down the line, I'm very happy and very grateful, and it's a great team that I work on. It's a great role that I have, and so kind of excited to see where the future leads in terms of that as well.
Viral, as who I mean, I consider you a leader in many different realms. Like I've seen you know, grace the stage, both small and large. I've seen you engage with, you know, individuals that are, again, at the C-suite and D-suite level, as well as students and those that are even pre-professional careers. So, you know, you have an ability to really influence others, and working on a team where, you know, there's always movement, and for a company of your size, that's always movement in and out. So I'm always curious to know, like when you talk to people, and this may go back to like part of the question I had asked earlier about like, you know, what it is it that you look for in networking. But when it comes to potentially finding the right talent to help bring on to either your team at Novartis or Novartis as a whole, like what are some qualities that you look for when you think, you know, this person would actually make a good fit for my team or my friend's team? But you know, how do you define for the listeners today, like what are some of the aspects of presentation or elements of quality in a conversation that can lead to a potential job or a promotion if they're already on a team internally?
Yeah, no, and I think that's so true. I think last year I wasn't involved in the hiring process, but I just connected people and that led to 7 people becoming MSLs. This year, it's so far been like 5 people. But I think to your point, it's so many times who you know and who can connect you to who. And so to that point, there's things that I look for in people that I may connect to people, whether it's part of our team or a team, or maybe it's for another role that I think might benefit both parties. And one thing I look for is that self-starter, right? Like I think everybody says it, but like nobody will want it more than you got to want it. You know, like you got to be there and you got to be that self-starter. The other thing I'd look for is that agility, right? Like the world is so, so unique in our time and space with everything going on and just the job roles, right? Everything may be super different in 12 to 24 months. Nobody knows. And so that ability to kind of roll with the punches and be agile, I think that's important. And that confident but not cocky, if you get what I'm saying. And it's kind of like, hey, if you may get questioned or you may get peppered with a couple of things here and there, if you don't know it, it's fine, understandable, just be able to hold your own in the fight, right? Not fight, but you know, that's kind of how I think about it in my mind. And I think those are the big things. I think for me, I kind of have a little bias, if I'm going to be honest, because I've never had the most qualifications for the role. I've just been willing to work maybe harder to figure it out. And so I appreciate that underdog hustle a lot. I'm kind of biased towards that. And I think Will Smith had this quote that kind of stuck with me. And he said, if you and me get on a treadmill, either you're getting off first or I'm going to die. Kind of that mindset where, and that's what I went through when I started my role, where I said, hey, we don't have access in Wisconsin. Nobody wants to talk to us. Well, I'm going to figure out how to get it over, under, around. And it's that hustle or that entrepreneurial mindset that I think is important that I look for, because when you connect people, and I think you might've told me this, when you connect people, it's like your name on that person. It's like, you got the Viral seal of approval. So I want to make sure it's good. And so I think kind of recapping agility, you got to have confidence, that entrepreneurial spirit or that hustle are some of those big ones right there.
Yeah, I think those are all critical. And I find it fascinating because, you know, when I see that in an individual already, I'm like, okay, good. This person's going to be creative. They're going to think outside the box and they're not going to settle for whatever wall is presented in front of them. Like, well, hey, I tried and I'm done. Like, yep. They'll be like, well, how do we get around this wall? Or, you know, how can I jump
exactly
over this wall or whatever the story is? And sometimes when I've had conversations with clients in the past where they're sort of like, well, that's not what's in my job description. And I'm like, okay, that's nice that it's not in the job description, but that job description was written 24 months ago and they're just carrying it forward. And if you are going to look at this as your, you know, your Bible or your gospel truth, like this is it, you're going to find yourself in a very short duration with the company if they take you on.
Yeah.
You have to be open to trying new things and accepting new responsibilities because, as you pointed out, I mean, the whole world is shifting at a very, very fast pace. And so what might not be, you know, I'm not a database guy. I'll just be upfront. It's a struggle for me to adjust and like start using data, but mostly the tools, right? So Excel, SQL, Tableau, like these are all new tools for me. It's not my job description at all, but I know that without it, and if I don't start, you know, really embracing those tools, I'm going to be left behind and that's going to be a challenge. So, you know, I'm trying to learn Python as well. So just as a, you know, fun thing to be able to say, oh, well, I know this much, you know, even this much weighs a lot. It really does.
Sure. Sure. And I think it's just important, right? The world is changing. And if you say, hey, I went to school to, and I talked to a lot of pharmacists that are even maybe seasoned or tenured in their career, physicians. Again, last week I was talking to a physician and a nurse. I don't know why I just end up talking to people. It's just people tell me to talk to people. I'm like, okay, I'll talk to you, you know? And so that's the thing, right? If somebody who I respect refers me to somebody, I'll give them the time because it's that credibility that they have. but people will just say, hey, you know, I've done X, Y, and Z for so long. Well, at every point, somebody's done X, Y, and Z for so long. You got to pick up those skills and develop those skills, whether that means, and I don't know if we're hopping into another question here, sorry, but I don't know if that means, you know, going to a conference or surrounding yourself with people who have more of those skills and that knowledge that hopefully you can glean from, or reading, or the beautiful thing about the world that we live in is there's so much information, but that's also one of the downsides, right? It's like information overload. But if you take that information and you use it to your benefit, you could use YouTube or whatever these sites are for so much information to learn so much, right? So I just think it's kind of like you got to own your own development.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, you know, how do you own your development? Like, what are some of the tools, the books, the videos, maybe TikTok? I mean, I'm a big TikTok and YouTube watcher, right? And I'll listen to podcasts. So I gravitate naturally towards digital media as a way of consuming leadership development, right? And I think it's important for anyone, no matter where you are. But what's on your nightstand or what's on your phone that you regularly turn to, or that you have found so much value that you refer others to and you're like, hey, you're in a place where I was, watch this, or I'm reading this today because I want to be better in 3 months.
Yeah, I think, and we might've talked about this on the other podcast too, but I think there's a book that was like instrumental in changing like the way that I kind of thought about a lot of things. So up until the 11th grade, I was very shy. I had big glasses. I would look down at the floor and I had a big backpack and like, I wouldn't talk to anybody. And my dad would always encourage me to read like positive mental attitude or self-help or leadership development books. And it got to the point where I was kind of like, you know, in sixth grade, you have those like reading to go to sixth grade, Great America. That's kind of what we had. And so most kids would read like Arthur or whatever other books. Like my dad would make me read like positive mental attitude books and then do a book report and then present to him, which was great now looking back at 30, but it wasn't great when I was in sixth grade. And so there's a book that was really crucial for me. It was called The Magic of Thinking Big. And I've referred so many people that book. I actually sent it to a couple people, but I've read that book probably like 7 times now. And what I mean by that is where I take the book, I sit down with a pen, I'm highlighting, I'm making notes. And I laugh in my mind because when I was in high school, I would have to do this for books. And I'm like, this is so silly. Why would I do this? And it was like some literature book from, you know, back in the day, like How to Kill a Mockingbird or something like that. But these books now, as I'm reading, it's interesting when I reflect to say that, hey, this was Viral in high school. Wow, these problems really don't seem that bad now. And so it gives you that perspective that, hey, in high school versus, you know, 5-7 years into your career, it's different. Even every year as I'm reading and I go back and I still skim those pages, I say, oh man, that's interesting. Like that was a problem I had. How did I go about fixing that? Like what happened? And it brings you back to kind of that humbleness and that humility that, hey, there's a lot bigger things at play than like me not getting my desk delivered to my apartment. There's a lot bigger things, or my couch having a rip in it. There's a lot bigger things at play, but it brings you back to, hey, how do you deal with it? But The Magic of Thinking Big, I think, just got me into the mindset of possibility thinking, opportunity thinking, think big, right? There's probably like 15 or 20 books, you know, but again, very honestly, I did not like reading. I don't want to say I don't like reading because I don't want to speak that into existence, but I need storybooks and I need things that like bring me in. So I like watching media. So I like watching YouTube videos. I like stuff of that sort, or I like storybooks. So there's a book called The Janitor. There's a book called Tuesday Morning Coachings. There's a book called, The Ultimate Gift. There's just books like these that are storybooks that I can read if I'm in a funk and I don't want to really use my mind, but I'm using it because I'm learning things subliminally. And for me, I don't know why, maybe I'm old school. I like reading a book and I like having a pen or a highlighter because it retains it in my mind more.
Yeah, the act of, you know, highlighting and writing notes reinforces the concepts that you are, you know, it's a visual thing. I think the majority of us, like 75% of the world, are visual learners, right? So when you see yourself writing something or you can refer back to it, like it's the picture that stays in your mind that you can just automatically pull back from the back of your head to the front, like, oh yeah, that's great. But those are some great books. Like I'm very familiar with Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, you know, what the mind can conceive, it can achieve. And so, you know, I totally appreciate the list because now I'm going to have to add that to my Audible book Audible list as well.
There's What to Say When You Talk to Yourself by Dr. Shad Hemstetler, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie, that whole Napoleon, right? Like, again, what you said, what the mind can believe and conceive, it so shall achieve, right? Like, they actually, the Napoleon Hill Group wrote another book called 3 Feet from Gold.
Yes.
And so it's a storybook, right? So in my like storybook mind, it works really well for me. And I've read that, like, I read that pre-taking the Napflex. I read that pre-job interview. I read that in a job funk. And it's just a good book to kind of go back to say that, hey, you're really just that close, right? Don't give up.
Yeah, I love that. Vero, if you could go back to your younger self and give one piece of advice, something that maybe at some earlier point you were maybe struggling or unsure of what to do next, you know, if you could go back and tell that younger Vero, like, hey, man, don't worry, you're going to be totally fine, but just make sure that you either keep doing this or you start doing this now. What would that one piece of advice be that would be helpful for you, but also for the listeners of this podcast today?
For me, it was, and this happened in different phases of my life, right? So one might have been in pharmacy school. The whole gist is, hey, whatever you're going through is going to help you to what you're getting to, right? And it's a lot bigger than what this current situation is. So don't worry about it. It'll all be okay. At the end of the day, if it isn't okay, it isn't over, right? Like, and so that's kind of how I think about it. There was a period of time where I almost got kicked out of pharmacy school because I like failed the class. Yeah, it's an interesting story, but I was just playing too much volleyball, right? Like, I wasn't focusing. So I just needed to refocus. And so if it isn't over, it's not over. Don't worry about it. It'll be okay at the end. But the other piece is I would take advantage of more opportunities, right? So one of the things that I wouldn't say regret, but going back, I wish I would have done differently is I wish I would have applied for a lot more scholarships, because then I would have been able to have a big jump or a big leeway in terms of that, in terms of opportunities. I think I took a lot of the traditional opportunities, you know, whether it's school, careers, taking on leadership roles, taking on different opportunities at the roles that I've been in. But I think it's some of those hidden opportunities that I may not have had the chance to do or the wherewithal to do.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever had anybody talk about scholarships on the show. And I think it's a huge miss. There are so many. I think there's even books that are out there for students to say, hey, here's a list of every scholarship that's available. And I think that just an investment of time and application and investment in energy to do that would have been good for me as well. So.
Yeah. And I think to that point, whether you're an executive trying to go get an MBA or trying to get an MPH or whatever, if you don't got to pay for it, save your money for something else. Try to get innovative and say, how can I get a scholarship or how can I get this funded some other way? I don't know. That's just kind of how my mind is trying to train to think now.
Well, we're in an inflationary period, Vero. I think that it would be, you know, it would be unwise for anyone to pass up free money. And given that the trajectory of the inflation, and I'm not being political here, I'm just literally pointing out what I watch on TikTok and YouTube, right? But I think that, you know, we are now at the time of this recording, I think we're at 8.6%. Which is pretty darn high. And the fact of the matter is that that's going to have an impact on day-to-day expenses. And so if you're still looking at furthering your career, your education, these are things that really should come to the forefront. Vero, I've had such a great time talking to you. I so appreciate, as always, you being on the show and just sharing your insights and experiences. As always, I'm wishing you much success, whatever it is that you choose to do going forward. And as always, I will continue to look forward to seeing you take healthcare to a higher level.
Thank you so much, Iqbal. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Higher podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.